Coming up on the Dr. Shirley and Steve Show, trauma need not last a lifetime. We're talking about the latest treatments in trauma. Stay tuned.
Smart, honest, and sometimes a little irreverent. The Dr. Shirley and Steve Show, only on Universal Broadcasting Network, starts right now.
Welcome to the Dr. Shirley and Steve Show. I'm Dr. Shirley, and Steve's not here tonight. How are you, John?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm glad that you're here.
Yeah.
And I haven't been fully abandoned by everyone.
No. We have an empty chair with Gina coming to join us soon.
Absolutely. So now that it's the Dr. Shirley and Steve Show, Steve is taking time off. Just because. Actually, no. Tonight he's at the House of Blues here in Los Angeles for an important 9/11 event, being that it's 9/11 tonight. Heroes Helping Heroes. It's raising money for Operation Gratitude, which sends care packages to our men and women serving in uniform around the world. So he's actually doing a very good thing for a very good cause. So we wish him and all the rest of those fine folks much success tonight.
Great.
Well, tonight, because it's the anniversary of 9/11, we're addressing trauma. And our guest is Gina Ross, who's an international leader in treating trauma. And she's actually was one of my teachers in the somatic experiencing training.
Oh, cool.
So she is wonderful. She's written a ton of books, which I have right here, Beyond the Trauma Vortex into the Healing Vortex, A Guide for Diplomats, Beyond the Trauma Vortex, The Media's Role in Healing Fear, Terror, and Violence.
You can hold them up to the camera.
See them, yeah.
Yeah.
Beyond the Trauma Vortex, Into the Healing Vortex, A Guide for the Military. She does a lot of work for military.
Oh, okay.
So she'll be telling us all about that. Here's one that's a wonderful one that I give to a lot of my patients. Beyond the Trauma Vortex, Into the Healing Vortex, A Guide for You.
Okay.
And it has some very practical and wonderful skills that we can all use to help regulate.
So can you tell us a little more about the somatic experience, what that's like?
Well, it's a training, as I've talked about. If anybody has heard my show, they know that I talk about it ad nauseam, and I will continue to do
good.
So.
Yeah, I'm asking because I was talking to a friend about it the other day, and I was trying to explain to them how it works. So,
well, you know, it's this incredible, incredible type of therapy that Dr. Peter A. Levine, developed years and years and years ago as he studied biology. And he wondered, why is it that animals in the wild don't get traumatized? So, you know, the antelope that almost gets caught but somehow runs away, he's still being an antelope. You know, he's not walking around like this, you know? And he was very curious because, you know, they're mammals,
right,
as we are. So he realized that after an almost death event, they kind of shake it off. And their nervous system kind of goes through this shaking period where they literally shake the trauma off.
Wow.
It's kind of a fight or flight response. And we don't. Mm. And so he studied it and studied and came up with this most incredible, which I've called magical, type of therapy that allows people to release the stuck fight or flight in our bodies when we don't get the opportunity to fight or take off running from what our nervous system perceives as dangerous.
So what happens to that energy? It just gets stuck?
It gets stuck in the muscles and in the nervous system. And if we can't fight or flight, we go into freeze.
Oh.
Or collapse. It's when we faint. You know, we call it fainting, but it's collapsing. The nervous system just kind of shuts down completely, or we dissociate.
Okay.
You know, and it literally gets stuck in the body, and that's why people who come from very unsafe childhoods or very unsafe environments, or even soldiers that are coming back with PTSD, are hypervigilant. They're like this because their nervous system is ready, you know, for the attack.
Yeah.
And Gina is a wonderful teacher, and she does a lot of work in Israel with the soldiers there and doing a lot of research, which she'll talk about tonight, and has written these wonderful books and is also a therapist. And I worked with her for a while on my own therapy as well.
Okay.
And she's here to talk to us about, you know, trauma and how it gets stored in the body and what we can do, on a daily basis. You know, she has this wonderful system that she calls, you know, it's like brushing your nervous system, kind of like brushing your teeth.
Mm.
We brush our teeth every day to keep our teeth clean.
Yeah.
We take showers, hopefully every day,
right?
You know, to keep our bodies clean. But we don't really do anything for our nervous system, to keep our nervous systems de-stressed, if I had to say it that way. So she has a wonderful thing that she's developed where you can use in 10 minutes, you can brush your nervous system at the end of the night and kind of get rid of anything that might have gotten stuck.
Oh.
You know? Yeah, so she'll talk to us about that.
Cool.
So I am very excited.
Yeah.
Stay tuned. We are going to go get her from the, as Steve says, not so green room. And we'll be right back with Gina Ross.
All right. Sounds great.
Okay. So joining me now in studio is psychotherapist Gina Ross. She's the founder of the International Trauma Healing Institute in the U.S. and Israel, where she co-founded the Israeli Trauma at Herzog Hospital in Jerusalem. She's worked in the field for over 20 years. Welcome, Gina.
My pleasure to be here. Great to see you.
That's our invisible audience. So I am so happy you're here. As I told our listeners before that, you know, I know you because you were one of my teachers in SC, and we did some personal work together, my personal work together. So, but I wanted to ask you, just for our listeners to know, how is it, because you've been working in the area of trauma for so long, how is it that you got started?
Actually,
what attracted you to
it? What was very interesting is that I wasn't interested in trauma at all when I was doing my therapy work in the beginning. Mm-hmm. I was really interested in people's growth and spirituality, and then it hit me that you can't really be spiritual when you're really traumatized. It disconnects you from it.
Yeah.
And I thought, if I want a spiritual world, we're going to have to heal trauma.
Wow.
And then I was studying with Peter Levine at the time, and he said something like trauma was at the root of violence, and that completely mobilized me. I thought, okay, I have to take this to the Middle East. It was just a very quick insight that came in, and it changed the rest of my life after this sentence and the decision that I made that something had to be done.
Yeah, well, and how long ago was that?
That was in 94, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
So,
18
years.
I was working as a therapist and doing all kinds of different things and different techniques. And also one more thing that happened that was amazing is that I realized all of a sudden that we had several techniques that appeared in the field all of a sudden that were short-term, that could heal trauma short-term.
Mm-hmm.
That was very unusual because for 120 years, trauma would go back and forth from the collective consciousness and disappear because we didn't really have the technology to heal it. And I mm-hmm. thought, why all of a sudden are we getting this huge amount of techniques that work and work fast? There must be something to this.
So when you're saying they work and work fast, more on a permanent level, that they actually healed trauma as opposed to
right.
when you're saying before, it kind of, you know, maybe it lay dormant for a moment and then you'd see the trauma come back. Or the effects of it?
Well, we didn't have the right tools because it was all done through talk therapy only.
Right.
So it took years and years and years to heal trauma. And all of a sudden, there were tools that were dealing with the body, that were dealing with the body-mind connection, that were dealing with energy. And these tools really had the power to heal trauma much more quickly. Also, because of the Vietnam War and what happened with the veterans, mm-hmm. trauma became much more present in the society.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
the two things together, there was some, the women's movement and the veterans movement, the veteran situation with the trauma that they had, brought trauma much more to the consciousness
yes.
of the public.
Yeah.
And of course, then what really, really brought trauma out of the closet was 9/11.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And since 9/11, how have you seen the trauma treatments change?
Well, before I go into the trauma treatments, what I have to say is that the consciousness of trauma has really developed enormously. It's still not completely there. There's mm-hmm. still stigma in some areas.
Yes.
And people still have to understand much better the definitions that we have that totally normalizes a traumatic reaction.
Well, yeah, so why don't we talk about that? Why don't you give our listeners those definitions that normalize a traumatic
yeah,
reaction?
Yeah, I thought it was really wonderful when I was standing with Peter when he said that, first of all, trauma is a normal experience of life, of everyday life. Like, we all go through traumatic events.
Right.
And then he made it very simple. He thought, okay, you're traumatized when your nervous system is just unable to digest the event that you lived through. It's not the event itself, but how your nervous system encountered it.
That is so interesting and so such an easy way to understand it, because I think that society still views the word trauma like as a big, huge event. You know, you get held up yeah. at the bank or a rape.
Right.
But right. we don't see trauma as just everyday events
right.
that our nervous systems view as unable to fully digest.
Right. So that we'll call them small T traumas versus right. big T traumas.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So I think he really normalized it enormously that way. And then he said, it's not that you are messed up. It's not that you're crazy, which is what people thought you were before when you were traumatized.
Right.
Because
right.
you were so dysregulated, right?
Right.
He saw it. No, it's actually this energy that's produced in your body to meet the event, but somehow you can't quite do it. And this energy remains stuck in your body.
Right.
So it's about energy stuck in the body. And it's about movements of defense that are incompleted.
Right,
so
right.
all of a sudden it was like, oh, well, something stuck, you can discharge. Something incompleted, you can complete.
Right.
And my God, all of a sudden something completely different appeared on the scene.
Yeah.
And I remember a client of mine saying, I realize now that it's just it's in my body. There's nothing wrong with me.
Yeah.
It's just like having a cold or even having a cancer or even have some kind of an illness. That's all it is.
Right, right. Yeah. That we yeah. can finish. And, you know, one of the one of the difficult things, I think it's because of how we've been indoctrinated, really,
right.
is for people to allow themselves to feel, say, anger that maybe they felt at three when their parent did something.
Right.
And they feel so guilty for feeling the anger. And so, you know, without understanding that it's just such a natural reaction to something that's done to you.
Yeah.
And if we can complete, you know, that cycle of anger, whether it was in that moment wanting to, you know, punch or run, or that it would actually dissipate.
Yeah. Of course. I mean, what you're saying is completely what it is that we need to do. And I think that some of the tools that we brought made it much more possible because the trauma energy is very violent, is very, very
yes.
powerful, right?
Yes. Yes.
When you are horrified or terrified or really enraged, this is very scary type of feelings.
Yes.
And the beauty about, of course, we don't want to feel them because we think that we're going to completely dysregulate and
yeah, know, just, almost disintegrate.
Exactly, disintegrate, yeah. exactly. And so the fact that now we could find a way to just take small pieces of that energy and digest it, that was a completely different departure. And now instead of being really traumatized by trauma
right.
and by trying to heal it, you go like and you discover some amazing qualities that your body has, that your nervous system has. When I say body, I'm really talking about the nervous system.
Yeah, yeah. Already built in.
Built in, exactly.
Right, right.
And that was the concept that I most adored.
Mm-hmm.
When I understood that, I went, oh my God, now we can heal the world.
Yeah.
And that was that when a traumatic event happens, the capacity to heal it is right there, emerges in the system by and of itself, is what you talked about, the inborn capacity to heal. Now, what happens in trauma, it gets dysregulated, and all we need to do is get it back.
Right.
That was the mystery. That was to me the click, like, well, if it's built in, if I don't have to go now and put it into all of the people that are traumatized, all I have to do is know how to invite it out again. That was much easier to think about healing whole populations.
Right, right. Well, tell us a little bit about that, about the healing populations with this type of...
Yeah, yeah. It was very exciting for me because I understood that in the 20th century, about 90% of the world population was exposed to trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And what we know today is that between 15 to 20% become traumatized.
Yeah.
So that's a huge number. We couldn't now ignore it.
Right.
Now,
right.
A very, very small number of this 20% becomes violent either against themselves or against others.
Right.
But a very small number of a huge number, 20% of the whole population, that's still enormous.
Right.
So I thought, well, we really have to do something about that. We really have to be able to heal trauma at national levels.
Right. Right.
And the tools, watching these tools develop in such a beautiful way, like every few months, I was exposed to one more, and I trained myself in many of them. And I got very excited because I thought, okay, different people will connect to different ones of these tools.
Right.
I don't think there's an answer for everybody that's the same.
Right. Okay, right. I agree.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that there is all this richness in the field and people can choose from it. And then I thought, well, how do we do that? How do we do that? And I thought, well, maybe the media can be our friends. Maybe mm-hmm. the media can take this information and put it out for us.
Yeah.
And I'm researching this book about the media, and you know, you can show us the black one that I showed you.
Which
the role of the media in
healing.
Yeah,
the media's role in healing. I'm going to put it up so people can see it.
Yeah, the big one, actually.
It would be wonderful if we can use the media that way.
Right.
In addition to, you know, the Honey Boo Boo entertainment, but also exactly. to use it in a way exactly. that could be so helpful and so healing.
Right.
Because it reaches so many people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's an incredible tool that we have. But then in researching the book, we realized that the media also could traumatize people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I started looking at the different social sectors, and we identified about 10 of them. Mm-hmm. Sectors that had the ability either to traumatize or to heal or both.
Oh, how interesting.
And I thought, well, if we took this information to each one of these sectors and say, hey, this is what happens in your field. This is what are the situations that make it difficult for you. Mm-hmm. And here's how you can heal it. And here's how you can impact the population that you work with. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We could now institutionalize, like put in the system mm-hmm. at a national level. Mm-hmm. And this is how we could reach whole populations.
So what would be an example of that?
Well, for example, one of them is the media, of course, that if the media became aware, first of all, what trauma is and start talking about it, the technique that are available and start offering them and talking about them. But also, like, if they were exposed to a lot of traumatic events themselves, mm-hmm. so they got traumatized. And when you're traumatized, you become very single-minded what you're looking at.
Right.
You don't look at the healing vortex anymore. You look at what we call the opposite, the trauma vortex.
Right, because it's all about survival.
And when you look at the trauma vortex, because you're stuck there, that's what you're passing on.
Right.
You're passing on to the public. So this was a perfect sector that if they understood how they were traumatized, not that they were bad, not that they were like terrible people, but just through being constantly covering things that were tragic and violent and terrible, mm-hmm. they were putting only that out in the system, in the collective system.
Right, right.
So if they had the awareness, they could then help us, help the public.
So then you're saying that programming could be a lot more balanced.
Much more balanced.
So we need to work with the executives, with those that green light projects.
Executives, the editors, okay. the owners, the journalists themselves, all of them.
We're going to work on that and see how we can coach the executives. Now, John is telling us that we have a phone call.
We did.
They hung up.
Actually, okay. I was on a panel for journalists recently.
Oh, you were?
They were talking about trauma in journalism. It was very fascinating.
That's so... Well, because I think, as I learned from you in all the trauma... courses that I've taken is that we can be traumatized, what is it, like a secondary trauma when we tell a story
or
when we hear
trauma,
a story.
Yeah, secondhand trauma.
Secondhand trauma,
and
right.
cumulative trauma too. I mean, you keep getting exposed over and over and over to bad situations. You're handling them, you're coping, but then one day is the extra drop in the glass and that's it.
Well, you know, it's so funny because for 10 years I investigated child abuse for LA County.
Oh.
And I used to go home and tell you, for example, my sister, you know, poor Jackie, would hear these stories. And I had become so immune to it because I had developed that kind of an order to be able to take these cases that I would talk about it like nothing, you know. And I would look at her and she would be horrified. And I apparently needed to get it out. So that didn't change my what I was saying. And now I'm so careful to not go into the story
because
I understand so much that secondary, you know, secondhand trauma. And in fact, sometimes now I'm still on the board for a child abuse advocacy agency. And when they talk about some of the cases, it's almost like I don't want to hear the details. I just can't hear it because it's very traumatizing.
Yeah. I'm very careful what I seed in the mind of the other people.
Right.
The ones that I'm talking about. Because, of course, you know, I work in the Middle East and I hear lots of very traumatic stories and very traumatic images, like really violent images.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember, like, talking to my board or talking to my husband or talking to my friends, I would not serve them the images.
Right.
Maybe one, so they would have just an inkling of what's going on. So that's part of the work that the media can do, for example.
Right, right.
The military, think about it. I mean, there are so many different ways. One is, like, if we really normalize trauma, that it's impossible to go through events and not be hit by them at some level. You know, your right. nervous system is going to be impacted.
Right.
It doesn't have to be terrible. So if every soldier knew that this is going to happen and every soldier trained his nervous system ahead of time to handle those impactful events that happen.
Right, right.
Then, first of all, they can heal much better when they come back. They don't have to have the stigma. We can train their families to understand what they're going through. I mean, it's amazing.
How wonderful.
And one more thing.
Yeah, yeah.
We can also show, and General Petraeus really understood that in Iraq, you know. You can really know what language to use mm-hmm. to not make the trauma vortex of the enemy worse. How to bring the healing vortex into the other.
Oh, that is so interesting. Say a little bit about that.
So there's a whole languaging, you know. For example, it's really amazing understanding if you switch from using the language of needing to do defensive force, using defensive force, instead of retaliatory punishing force.
Oh, uh-huh.
You do punishing force most of the time, you're going to get the trauma vortex of the other much worse, lashing back at you.
Right. Well, you know what? Even as you're saying those words, defensive versus punishing,
yeah.
I notice something different exactly. in my body.
Exactly. And people, even when they are crazy, like even if they're caught in the trauma vortex, there are some inkling of what's normal, what's rational,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're saying, I'm not going to allow you to hurt my people, so I'm going to have to use this defense force, be aware of it.
Right.
That's different from going and say, you're terrible, you're horrible, and I'm going to punish you, and I'm going to retaliate. Because retaliatory does nothing other than make the other retaliate again. You're fueling the problem.
Well, because as I'm noticing what I'm feeling in my body while you're talking, when you say retaliate, in my mind it means you're going to get me anyway, so I have to be ready for it. When you say defense, then I have more control. If I do something to you,
that's
then
right.
you're telling me you're going to do something to me.
That's right.
But by saying that you're going to retaliate, then that means it can come at any time, whether I do something to you or not. So now I'm ready.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And if
yeah.
you're on the defensive, that's it. You know?
Right. Forget it. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
That is so fascinating.
It's a whole different thing in the terminology. So I'm working a lot about words right now. How to understand what are the words that excite the trauma vortex?
Right.
And what are the words that invite the healing vortex?
Right. Well, as you talk about that, it reminds me of one of the first courses or talks that I heard from Dan Siegel,
right.
you know, Dr. Dan
right.
Siegel. And he started the whole talk that day by saying, close your eyes and pay attention to your body. And I'm going to say a word and I'm going to repeat
yeah.
it five times. And you
the
know,
yes
right?
And
the yes
no.
and the no.
Yeah, yeah.
So he
yeah.
says no,
yeah.
no,
yeah.
no. And
yeah.
it's the same tone and
exactly.
the same voice. And then he says yes, yes. And you notice your body when he's saying no, kind of, you know,
right.
get a little
right.
ready, get a little defensive. And when he says yes, this calming, you
yeah.
know. So words, yeah, mean so much.
They mean so much and understanding what's going on. Because I thought, you know, sometimes when a group is already in the trauma vortex and they're already in the violence, you have to use force to stop them.
Right.
There are sometimes where it's impossible not to.
Right, right.
But, so understanding that and accepting it, and at the same time, you always keep open the possibility of the diplomatic course.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're fighting you. Anytime that you're willing to stop, we're here to listen.
Mm-hmm.
We're here to
mm-hmm.
take that in.
Mm-hmm.
That's such a different tack.
Right.
So
right.
what I want to talk about, this is really very, very close to my heart,
mm-hmm.
is what trauma does,
mm-hmm.
we get very polarized.
Yes. Yes. And say a little bit more about that.
So once we get very polarized, like everything is black or white. There's no more gray areas.
Right.
We become more intolerant, more inflexible. So it's very difficult to see the middle term. It's very difficult to think in compromise.
Right.
So it's very essential that we clear our trauma and clear our nervous system and balance it back. Because when it's not balanced, the neocortex doesn't work as well.
No, it doesn't, to help stop from reacting.
Right. We're not rational. We're doing something. You know, there's an incident that really struck me. A woman was hit by a car. She was in a very bad accident and really suffered a lot and didn't heal it. And she was on the road somewhere, a pretty empty road, and she saw a car tailing her. Now, she's in the trauma vortex, right? She says, oh, yeah, you're telling me? I'll teach you how to do that. And she breaks her car, and the car from the back hits her.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, she taught them a lesson, right? But look what happened to her.
Yeah.
And that's what happens when we're in the trauma vortex.
Right. So what you're saying, just so I can clarify a little and understand it, is that because she didn't heal the trauma of the accident, whatever might have gotten stuck in her nervous system, whenever she got behind the wheel of a car, it would put her in the trauma vortex because she hadn't completely...
She hadn't completed it.
She hadn't digested it. Her nervous system had not digested it completely.
Especially if there was a trigger of somebody tailing her too closely.
Right, if that's how the the accident started to begin with.
Right.
Right.
So she immediately reacted from what we call the primitive brain, from the instinctual brain.
Exactly.
And not from the rational brain.
Right, because this guy tailing her was, you know... When someone tailgates you, you feel like it's a little aggressive, but it wasn't necessarily a replay of the accident.
Right. And he wasn't intending to hurt her.
Right.
He certainly wasn't intending to hurt himself,
right,
having her slam her brakes on him.
Right.
So it's that kind of irrationality that happens when you're caught in the trauma vortex.
Yeah. Well, and we see it, I think, in day-to-day people. I think most of us, if not all of us, have met people who we notice they would lose it at any moment, or people who are so quick to anger, you know, that tells me and informs me, as you've taught me and as, you know, that they're stuck in some kind of a trauma vortex that hasn't been fully digested, as you're talking about, or fully worked through.
That's right. And not released, exactly.
Not released,
and, and there are three different ways that people can be in a pattern, stuck in a pattern. And our listeners maybe can recognize themselves. We all can recognize ourselves in one pattern or another.
Yeah.
But they can also recognize the people around them. Somebody, as you say, that reacts quickly and gets angry very quickly is very irritable. Or somebody that gets scared very quickly and avoidant or gets out of the scene.
Yes.
Or you see them petrified. Or somebody who freezes.
Who freezes.
They cannot operate anymore. They can't do anything.
Right.
And
you
wonder, well, what happened? Like, why are you doing this?
Right.
And when we don't understand that, we see those as bad qualities in the other person.
Right.
We see them as being a pain in the neck, they're intrusive, they are weak, they are this, they are that. We give them labels.
Right.
And we forget to look at it as an impact of trauma. And once we understand the impact of trauma, how to read a person, we approach them very differently.
Completely differently.
Yeah. That's the beauty, I think, of this type of program of understanding. Can you imagine if the whole nation understood just the simple fact?
Right.
The simple fact of how to look at the other through understanding what just happened to them. Let me just find out first.
Right. Exactly. And it's something that, as you say, you know, what Peter said that one time really impacted you. I was at a lecture with Steve Porges, who's another wonderful researcher in this area. And he said, you know, if we look at adult behavior as an adaptation to what their environment, you know, to their environment, whether in childhood
what happened
or
to them,
we can make an educated guess as to what they might have experienced.
And we can have much more compassion, right?
Exactly, because if we see it as an adaptation, we can have much more compassion than what's wrong with this person.
And understanding.
Exactly.
There's another thing I really wanted to tell you about because I'm very excited about it too. Well, first of all, we took these heavy-duty techniques that were developed to deal with deep trauma, PTSD, post-traumatic disorder, or stress disorder, or shock trauma. And we did something we called emotional first aid for stress and trauma.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And what that means that I can now teach you in a few hours how to notice your first signs when you get activated, when you get upset, worked up.
Mm.
And then I can teach you how to discharge that on the spot without effort.
Wow.
Without having to be willpower, mm-hmm. without having to be disciplined or anything like that, just relying on your ability to heal.
Wow.
And then out of that, we developed something called brushing your nervous system every night.
Mm-hmm. Which I mentioned a little bit on the intro that you would come up with that, which is so wonderful.
Which then you go through your day every night, mm-hmm. you know, or any time of the day that's good for you. It doesn't matter. And you go through the events and see, well, which one is still stuck? What unfinished business do you have?
Mm-hmm.
And you process it through your body. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing I want to say. And you mentioned it before, and I agree with you. But I want to say it a little bit in a different way. That if we are able to feel the unpleasantness at the sensation level, sensation is a very short lifetime.
Yeah.
It's a very clear beginning, middle, and end.
Yes.
It passes. Mm-hmm. It dissolves. Mm-hmm. It goes away. It releases by itself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you take those events, you turn them into sensations in your body, and you wait for the release to come. And then you also do something that I'm going to talk about later about resources. And my God, you just are like, oh, I'm at peace right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's a settling that happens in our body. There's settling that happens in our psyche. And then the beauty about it, once I settle my body, my ideas, my thoughts are much clearer.
Right.
Now I can think, I can reason, I can look at options, which is better, which is not. I'm not in knee-jerk reaction anymore.
Right.
It's very different, isn't it?
Very different. So give us an example for our listeners of like what you would do. So you're saying like at the end of the night, you go through an event. How do you know if you're done with it or if you still have a little bit of activation?
Oh, okay. Well, first of all, if you think about an event,
mm-hmm.
and you have a heart beating or constriction, tightness in your throat or in your chest or in your stomach, you know that something is still there. This is what we call the stuck energy of the event.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
So anything that's unpleasant, we call it the trauma vortex. It doesn't have to be a big deal. Okay?
Right.
So then you do one sensation at a time. You focus one sensation at a time. You just put your attention there and you see what happens next. This is the magic.
So I am thinking about the altercation I had with maybe the worker at Starbucks earlier that day. And as I'm thinking about going to...
He was very unpleasant.
They said something that I felt was rude.
Snapped at you.
Exactly. Okay. And all of a sudden, I noticed a little bit of tightness in my chest. So you're saying I would focus on that, the tightness.
Tightness on your chest, mm-hmm. and you wait for the release to come up.
And then that's what you're saying. See what happens next.
Yeah.
And usually it's release.
Yeah. And what are the releases? It's automatic. It happens on its own. You don't make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes a deep breath
comes up.
Sometimes it's a trembling or shaking. Sometimes it's the yawning. Sometimes it's a heat wave.
Mm-hmm.
There are a few signs that show you that it doesn't even show you. They just happen.
That your nervous system is releasing.
And after that, the tightness is gone.
Right.
Now, maybe the event is not finished and you'll have another tightness somewhere else. So you take the next one and the next one until your body says, until you feel like, oh, I'm fine right now.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe there were other three events also that weren't nice, but you're tranquil. You got some peace. Because here's the thing. Well, go ahead.
I was just going to say the fascinating thing about that is that what happens is when you think about, say, the Starbucks event, you no longer feel tightness.
That's right.
You really don't.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's gone. And
it's
gone. Oh, maybe this guy had a problem with his girlfriend this morning. Maybe he didn't get enough money to pay his bill. You'll start understanding what's going on and you see it has nothing to do with you.
Right.
That's the whole thing.
And then it's gone. And then it becomes just an unpleasant event that happened in your day, but it's no longer triggering.
And here's the beauty of it.
Hmm.
If you had had 30 traumas, you do not need to clear 30 traumas.
Right.
All that happened is that what these traumas did, they dysregulated your nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
The moment you re-regulate, you don't need to go through all of them.
Through all of them, because all of a sudden you may start to feel peaceful and calm.
Because your body knows now how to do this on its own.
Right, right. So you're training your body almost to be on autopilot, really.
Exactly.
Wow. Okay, well, we have... We thought we had another phone call, and I guess they're not staying on long enough. If you call, please be a little patient because we want to finish. I want Gina to finish her thought before we take the phone call, but we welcome all phone calls, so please call and ask us any questions you would like. So go on. The number,
I'll put it up.
Do you want to give the number, John?
Yeah, I'll do that.
Well, let's say it also. What is it, 323?
Yeah, it's a different studio, so let me bring it up here.
Okay. Yeah. John will put it on the website.
Yeah, I wanted to also mention about the book for the public because it's such an amazing resource, you know.
A guide for you. It's the one, I was showing the books before you came in, that it's a wonderful resource for people. Now, you were going to talk a little bit about resourcing.
Yes, and I wanted to tell you, can I give you two examples from my work in Israel? It was really amazing. This man, a katyusha, fell on his apartment while he was in it.
What is that?
Katyusha is like a bomb.
Oh, my goodness.
A bomb, fell and exploded his house. But it pushed him into the shelter room.
Uh-huh.
So he was saved.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and wonderful. Thank God his family wasn't there. But he was traumatized.
Sure.
And he went to a few therapists and nothing happened. And he was a truck driver.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody took me to him just before the Sabbath starting. In Netanya, he was in an hotel with his family. He says, I drive the truck and then I get so upset and I have to stop and take 15 minutes to listen to music to calm myself so I can drive again. Mm-hmm. And then I have to do that every few kilometers.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay, let's just work. And I worked with him, had him noticed when he heard the boom, right? Mm-hmm. It was the boom that was really upsetting.
Right.
He noticed he discharged. We did that for 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It was
so,
done.
So when you said he heard the boom, he'd notice either the tightness in his chest or his throat or whatever, and then he waited,
and the discharge would happen.
Uh-huh.
Okay? So
uh-huh.
we did that for about 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then I left, and then I couldn't talk to him on the Sabbath because he was religious, and I called him on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
I said, Shlomo, how are you doing? He says, you don't know what happened. I had one more upset when I heard the boom, and I did what you taught me, and I'm completely fine now.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? Because I saw his kids would not go in the pool because they would hear a birthday party with balloons popping, and mm-hmm. they would really freak out.
Yeah, yeah.
So he worked with his kids, and the kids could go to the pool.
Oh, how
lovely.
And I go
oh, my God. He said, now I can go back to my apartment to be able to reform it again. We have to fix it.
Right, right.
So that was just on the spot this.
Right.
It was amazing.
Well, but that's the beauty of this type of therapy that it is. I've always called it magical because it is. It can be that quick.
Right.
Yeah.
If people are not traumatized from years and years, but there is an event that got stuck in their system.
Right. If there isn't what's called a lot of developmental trauma, which means trauma as a child.
Or sometimes also it doesn't have to be only developmental. If you have a shock trauma when you were young, let's say.
Okay.
And that's still in your system. It's going to affect how you react to a lot of other things.
Right, right. So now it builds on itself.
Right.
Yeah.
So now you have to go and have layers and layers and layers of upsetting events. And that takes a little bit longer.
Right.
But if you go through shocking events and you're normally highly functioning, but you really got upset. I was, doing a supervision with a woman who actually heard that her cousin died when she was in the car through the radio.
Mm.
So she got very shocked by it.
Yeah.
And she couldn't attend to her clients after that.
Mm-hmm.
So I took her through the event and had her discharged. And all we have to do, this is the amazing thing, is not run away from the sensation.
Right. Right.
Because we're taking it into small amounts only.
Right.
So we don't have to get scared.
Right.
We don't have to relive the worst of the trauma because who wants to do that?
Right.
It's too much.
Right. Right.
There are some great techniques that work, but they are not as gentle as this one.
Right.
Some of them are not as gentle. So I got enamored of this technique, and I take it everywhere now. Yeah. And I really have a plan or teaching it to a national hotline, a helpline of 1,000 volunteers in one country.
Wow, that's wonderful. Yeah. So how can people get a hold of your emotional first aid for stress and trauma is what you call it, yes?
Yes.
You refer to it as...
E-fast.
E-fast.
So we do it fast.
I love that. Yeah.
We EU fast.
So how can people get
okay, so my website is www.ginaross.com. Mm-hmm. You can get me through that. We organize for a group, like I'm going to do a training for the Gay Center, for example, next week, in a few weeks. Training, you know, we have, if you have 20 people together, we put them together and train them a whole day.
Okay.
Or do it in two afternoons, and we teach you the technique. Now, one woman in Israel read the book, and she was a teacher, so she could do it.
Mm-hmm.
She taught herself by herself.
Wow. Wow.
And they had a virtual shelter. She had four boys. Mm-hmm. And they were, at the time, they were like 10 red alerts every day from bombs, missiles being thrown on the city.
Wow.
And so it would be like screaming. And she insisted to come to the launching of my book in Hebrew.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you know, I taught myself. And when the next bomb, the red alert that came, I said, kids, let's go. Says, Mommy, what's wrong with you? You're not yelling and screaming anymore.
Wow.
She said, kids, we don't do that anymore.
That's wonderful.
We just go calmly to where we have to go. It was amazing. And she says, every mother has to have this book in her purse.
Yeah.
It was very charming. It was very lovely. She taught it by herself, to herself through the book. I didn't think that was possible, but she did. So there are many ways to get it. Anyways, to get
okay. Well, we're going to put your website up on our radio page, so people can reach you and can learn more about this emotional first aid for stress and trauma, because it is so important to learn.
Do you have one more minute?
Absolutely. Because I wanted to ask you about your research.
That's it. That's exactly what I wanted to talk.
We're on the same page.
Exactly. We're on the same wavelength here. So here's the thing. Emotional first aid has already been researched, and we know it works extremely well. So I have no problem with that.
Wonderful.
However, because emotional first aid is based a lot, not only, but a lot on SE,
mm-hmm.
and SE is being researched now,
yes.
academically, we need the academic research to get into big bureaucracies like the Veteran Administration,
mm-hmm.
the military, the big hospitals, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So we're asking people to help us fund the rest of the research. We got a lot of a major part of it we already have,
mm-hmm.
but we need another third still,
mm-hmm.
And we will finish it within a year. And after that, that means we can put it everywhere.
That's
every single soldier does not have to wait until they come out and go through private channels. They'll be able to have it through the Veterans Administration and in the field before they go to war or they go to battle.
Wow.
So that our young people are taken care of.
That's amazing. Because so how can people
So they can go on the same website.
Okay.
They have they can click on donating, and mm-hmm. there'll be a PayPal amount. And you know, $5, $10, if there are thousands of you that do it, we'll do two researches. Of course, if you have, you can give 100, 200, 500, 1,000, then it will happen very quickly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it would really be helpful for us to get that done. And we're developing so many wonderful tools. But can you imagine, I have a reserve commander in Israel, mm-hmm. that used it with his soldiers in the field.
Wow.
In the field.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They were traumatized because they had to keep taking a hill, go up a hill, and they were being bombarded, and they couldn't see where their army was, and they mm-hmm. didn't have the weapons to answer back. And they were really upset. They were mm-hmm. really, they couldn't talk to their parents. They were angry.
Mm-hmm.
He used the technique on them, and they were able to get up on the hill and do their job, talk to their parents. The whole thing was different.
That's amazing.
You know,
that's
like amazing. In the field, on the spot.
Wow.
This is what's so special about it. Anytime, anywhere, on the spot. No need for extra tools, no need for a pen, no need for paper, no need for a radio, no need for nothing.
No need for ongoing therapy.
Nothing, yeah.
Wow.
And you build the resiliency. And then, I'll give you maybe one last example.
Mm-hmm.
One woman came out of her apartment and saw a bus exploding mm-hmm. in Jerusalem, you know, when the Intifada was on.
Yes.
And she got very traumatized, very disorganized. She couldn't go to work. She was very upset.
Sure.
She went and saw one of my students. One session. She was fine, back to work. Mm-hmm. A year later, she comes out of her apartment, another bomb, another bus explodes.
Wow.
What does she do? She walks towards the explosion and starts helping people.
Wow.
Now that was, we were not expecting that.
That, yeah, wow.
Like the
that
resiliency
is amazing.
Was tremendous.
That is amazing.
It gives me the goosebumps just talking, the goosebumps
yeah.
talking about it, because it inoculates you against future traumatic events.
Right, right. Oh, that is amazing.
So can you imagine giving that to every kid in the school?
Oh.
Can you imagine every doctor, every nurse, every teacher knows about it?
That is.
Can you imagine every clergy, every member of a clergy, every priest, every imam, if the rabbi knows how to do that with their people?
It would change the world.
That's right.
I mean, it really
right.
would.
Yeah.
It really would. So for people who want to donate, is it a 501? Is it a tax deductible?
It's a 501. It's a tax deductible.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
And they will get the whatever the bill, no, the receipt for it.
The receipt, okay.
For any, and also, by the way, we donated all the books to the foundation too, mm-hmm. to the institute. So mm-hmm. anybody who buys the book or the CD is also tax deductible.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
We have a book for the soldiers, for the military. We have a book for the medical field. Mm-hmm. Anybody in the medical profession, nurses, surgeons, doctors, etc. We have a book. We're doing one for the clergy. We have a book for the media. We have a book for the psychologists, mm-hmm. And we have a book for diplomats and NGOs.
Wow.
And that's about learning how to speak that language that brings your healing out instead of your
trauma
vortex.
In the trauma vortex.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Gina, you are doing such wonderful work. I'm donating $1,000 tonight.
Oh, my God.
For your research.
You're kidding.
I'm doing it.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
Yes. This
you
is
know
about
what? You're really touching me right now. That's
I
amazing.
Am. You
wow.
are helping so many people yeah. and changing
That's
so many
millions
lives.
Of people. Millions
I mean,
of people.
Oh, Gina, I just, you know, I knew I loved you before. Yeah. And now, yeah. you know, it's you're doing amazing work.
You know what we're doing? We are designing a very tight project to heal at the national level in the Middle East that can then be exported everywhere. Mm-hmm. Imagine mm-hmm. all the refugee camps having this program.
Wow. Wow.
Can you imagine
oh
just
my gosh.
Spreading this everywhere?
It would be amazing.
Yeah.
It
yeah.
would be
yeah.
even from a local standpoint, I mean, crime rate
yes.
would go down because people wouldn't be reacting all over
exactly.
the place.
Exactly.
You know?
Divorces, crime
oh,
rates.
Oh, so many things.
Eating disorders.
I think.
Cutting behavior.
Steve actually, you know, texted me real quick before we started the show and said at this, at the House of Blues, he's at this event
right.
for 9/11.
Yeah.
That he had met a soldier that gave him the statistics that there's 22 yeah. soldiers a day committing suicide.
It breaks my heart. So please, maybe even before the one for the public, put the one for the military, because all their families can understand what's going on with them just by reading this.
Right, right.
I worked with a veteran from 1973 war, and he said, had I read your book then, I would have never gone through what I went through. No alcoholism, no drug, no police behavior, nothing.
Right, right.
Because he understood from the book, one mm-hmm. piece of the book, why me? Because he had a lot of survivor guilt.
Mm-hmm.
He got
mm-hmm.
it. He used to cry on the drop of a hat.
Mm-hmm.
The man
mm-hmm.
was like 50-something years old.
Mm-hmm.
Stopped
mm-hmm.
crying. Stopped getting angry with his wife. Stopped getting angry with his kids. It was amazing. Of course, wasn't drinking anymore.
Right,
but that
right,
he wasn't
right.
drinking anymore before he came to me.
Right.
Just astounding. Just astounding.
So listeners out there, please help us change the world. Please help Gina change the world and donate, even if it's just a dollar. Thank you
yes.
so much, Gina, for being here tonight.
My great
I
pleasure.
Really, really appreciate
and
it.
And you are terrific, darling. Thank you for the good work.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
So the takeout tonight, I do a takeout every night where we just give our listeners just a little tidbit of something that either I've heard at trainings, I think I've even quoted you sometimes. And so tonight I'm actually going to quote right along with what we're talking about, Daniel Goldman, who's the author of Emotional Intelligence.
Right.
And he says, maturity is the process that widens the gap between impulse and action.
Hmm.
And how we do that is by exercising the prefrontal cortex that we talked about, how that helps us take a moment, stop, and think before we act. So stimulating or exercising the prefrontal cortex helps widen this gap. And how we can do that is with your exercises.
Yes.
With the EFAST method.
Exactly.
You know, exactly. Stimulates the prefrontal cortex to widen the gap between impulse and action.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Rational, constructive, healthy, wonderful, generous, loving action.
Exactly.
That's what happens.
The difference between responding and reacting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, everyone. Thanks, John, for being here and not abandoning me like Steve did. And everyone have a great night. We'll see you next week. Take it away, Barry.